I am sure that it was within months of my arrival to St. Luke's that I started some sermon complaining about the lectionary and how it totally skewed the interpretation of a passage because it shortened it by a verse or sometimes just a couple of words. And of course, I, like most people who complain, are ignoring the good work of the folks that did in producing such a successful thing in the first place. So I acknowledge that I'm grateful for the hours the committee put into crafting a lectionary that is meant to be a mechanism for creating unity amongst the Christian traditions that use it. However, the complaint I make today is still valid, and the gospel reading assigned was too short. A few of you probably noticed that what I read from the gospel was quite a bit longer than what is in your bulletin handout. And there are reasons I didn't send that to Diane. I'm partly saving paper. Some of you might have started to think, is he going to read the entire second half of Mark's gospel today? The reason it was longer is because, number one, I'm allowed to make it longer. I'm allowed to make the readings as long as I want. And especially when the lectionary planners drop the ball, and at least in my humble opinion, as they did here. But they drop the ball on this potentially every year on the last Sunday of the season of Epiphany. The last Sunday in Epiphany is always the story of the transfiguration of Jesus. Year A, we hear it with Matthew's mosaic nuance. Year B, this year, Elijah is in focus. And year C, with a nod to the Exodus story. But also, every year, the second half of the story is left off. All three of these gospels attach directly to it, and in the action of the scene, the story at the bottom of the mountain. It isn't that they leave it off this week so we can focus on the mountaintop and then put it somewhere else in time. In fact, I would suggest Lent 1 might be a great way to follow up the story, the rest of this story. But the second half of the story never appears in the lectionary, which might seem odd that you are probably familiar with the phrase, help my unbelief. But if all of the Bible you ever were exposed to was on Sunday morning lectionary in the Revised Common Lectionary, you would never hear this story. There is, of course, one optional exception to that. It is offered as an extension in year C. But however, year C version of that story reduces it to its nicest possible version. There's no foaming at the mouth. Jesus says about half the mean things that he says to the disciple he does in Mark, and it's the shortest one. So you would never get the full glory of this. And the reason I feel so strongly about this is, number one, it takes a story that has a whole story arc, two parts, one of which you never get to hear, because it has an important message about the revelation of Jesus to his disciples. Because Jesus is not only revealed on the mountaintop, Jesus is also revealed at the bottom of the mountain. The transfiguration doesn't just appear to him when his clothes are whiter than could be bleached by any human. They're also when he sits at the bottom with arguing disciples and scribes who are impotent to cast out a demon from a boy, and they are also unable to get along. Last year, on annual meeting Sunday, I asked you to lay down a virtual mile marker. How close to the wilderness were you? This year, I want to ask you to lay down another marker. What is your elevation? Where have you been over the last 12 months? Have you been on the top of the mountain? Have you found yourself at the bottom? And where would you put these mile markers for the parish of St. Luke's in relationship to the wilderness and to elevation? If you are at the top of the mountain, as you do that inside of yourselves, this story tells you you can't stay there. And then if you're at the bottom, it tells you that Jesus will be there when you call out, even in your unbelief. Both experiences are part of the life of discipleship. moments of illumination and moments of failure, confusion, terror, and begging. It is important to take that elevation measurement internally. One reason for that is that whatever you marked, or wherever you marked that spot in the spiritual health topography of St. Luke's, the data probably doesn't agree with you. If you think that things are great, there is no measurable to confirm that. The income side of the budget and the almighty average Sunday attendance are not significantly different in 2015, 2016, or 2017. On the other hand, these metrics don't tell us a tale of the troubles that happened here. A person who only read your parochial report for the past 3 years would be unable to discern anything happened here, with the exception of one metric. The expense side of your budget is reduced to about a third of what it used to be. Data is only one part of the story, though. And I don't think I overstate it that many of you feel farther from the wilderness this February than last, or closer to the mountaintop this February than last. Though I also recognize that is not true for all of you. Or you feel like the air is a little thinner and the sun seems closer. That feeling and marking that internally is very important. In fact, what lies ahead of you couldn't be done if you weren't feeling as though you had been to the mountaintop or tasted at least a portion of the promised land. After all, that is what the mountaintop is for Jesus in this story. Jesus tells his disciples on the trip down from it that he needed that because the road ahead for him is to be a difficult one. And the next time he ascends a hill, it will be to be executed. So what does lie ahead for us? Well, the data also tells us some of the story, and it reveals to us some of the challenges that you've already faced and not resolved yet. Right now, you know what a predictable and reasonable income is, and you know what a predictable and reasonable parish size is as things are currently configured. It is what it has been in 2015, 2016, and 2017. And if there is no change, you know who you are, and you know where you are right now. It is critical to acknowledge this, because in 12 months, you are likely to have to make some tough decisions. And 12 months is not a long time. It's exactly how long I've been here. Like the disciples were not allowed to build booths and linger on the mountaintop, we also won't be able to stop time and just say, let's go forth just the way we are and not worry about the valley below. In a year from now, at this very annual meeting, you will probably hold elections for a vestry. And when that happens, it means that you will have to call a priest and negotiate a contract with them. Now, I'm not saying I won't be that person, but it is important to know that the bishop-appointed vicar is not a long-term solution. It actually isn't a solution at all. It is a way to stop time for just a little while and put the pieces back together. At some point, the responsibility will be yours to keep things moving forward. That's why 2018 is, whether you or I like it or not, a year of discernment. That discernment begins with the honest recognition of where you are and what you have. Where you are is that internal marker of elevation and distance, and it's also the data. It's the resource piece. It's the what you have. And the next step is going to be for you all, and I can only assist in this in some ways, to work together to craft a picture of where you would like to be on this journey in a year, or maybe 5 years, or maybe even further. There is no right or wrong necessarily in the futures you imagine. There can be real harm in not discerning that outcome together. And that is a fact that you already know because that is what happened in the past. This tough discernment did not happen all together. And together, it's okay to discern something that's fantastic. And whether your goal is full-time or part-time clergy, they both have significant challenges. If you discern part-time, which best matches your data at present, you will need to know it will increase difficulty in calling priests in the future. In fact, data from the National Church tells us that search processes, even for full-time positions right now, are becoming increasingly hard to fill and to get people to move for. If you discern full-time, which may match those internal markers better, you'll have to get creative at your current resource level to make that work. You're going to have to entertain ideas that are brand new to you, things that have not even crossed your minds, probably. Because we know that the old model doesn't work. We have data and anecdotes and experience to prove that. To find those novel ideas, you may need to reach out to other folks. You may need to do some research. You also are going to have to be strong advocates for whatever the new way of resourcing the parish might be. It could be partnerships with other parishes, the diocese, or some entity never thought of as a partner. Whatever it is, the discernment done to get there must be together, so that you know when the path starts to get bumpy, and it will, that you are heading in the way God called you all. But the clergy position is only one discernment of many. What will the leadership look like in this place when you have to form a vestry? Is God calling you to be part of that vestry? I'll make no secret of this, that I encourage the current leadership to take some time off of a formal leadership position once that body is no longer needed because a vestry can be elected. I know some of them will take me up on that encouragement. I know that others don't want to hear that. The time spent on this L team actually counts for double or triple vestry service. And they will have some good pieces of knowledge for the next vestry. And so some mentorship will need to take place. But the wisdom I offer is when the vestry is elected to enjoy a Sabbath time, a well-deserved one for the excellent work you will have completed by 2019. Things feel good here at St. Luke's. And that glow of the top of the mountain is just the fuel that we will need to enter a strong time of discernment. Jesus is revealed on the mountain, and he is revealed at the bottom. Jesus' disciples get it wrong also on the mountain by wanting to stay, and they get it wrong at the mountain bottom by having little faith. On the mountain, we may want to get locked into the moment, and in the valley, we may get beat up by a demon-possessed child and get called a faithless generation. And eventually Jesus will say, "I'll just do it myself." But there is also in the story a father nearby who needs something. He needs his boy, and he needs Jesus. He needs Jesus to help his unbelief. And there are people around us with needs. Sometimes we fail them. And sometimes we fail to help their unbelief. But that is not the end of the story. Because when that happens, we can go to Jesus and say, "Why are we stuck?" Just like the disciples did. And Jesus says to us, that big bad problem the world has, that persistent demon in your midst, that seemingly insurmountable deficiency that you have, that uncomfortable discernment, that valley of deep darkness that you are to pass through, there is only one way to cast trouble that deep from your presence. And it only happens through prayer. Prayer will be our tool of discernment in 2018. It is the weapon that casts out all darkness. It is the way that we meet the world's needs for their children and for their unbelief. It is the way that we will change ourselves from a faithless generation, a wandering people, and into disciples. Amen.